Hello and welcome to The Greenhouse. I'm Preth on the Wall.
And I'm Anna Snow, and we're going to talk about all things planet Earth.
Coming up today, we're going to be talking about palm oils, how important they are in every product you find, but the reason experts are now warning you to not boycott them, but just watch how you use them and make sure you use them sustainably.
Yes. And we will also be talking about gas stoves, some of the problems they can cause, and how it's kind of a political debate now.
I know. It's kind of crazy how this happened. So yeah. Let's give you the timeline. So here's how it started. On January 9th, Bloomberg published an exclusive interview with this person named Richard Tremuka Jr. Now, he is a commissioner with the U.S. Consumer Safety Product Commission. Same way it sounds, they don't really tackle any environmental issues. They tackle more of like how it's going to affect consumers when you buy it. And they said that they may be making stricter conditions, stricter regulations for gas stoves. And the reason they were going to do this was about concerns over indoor air quality and trying to make it safer. So in his interview, here's what he said. He said, gas stoves are a hidden hazard and any option is on the table. Products that can't be made safe can be banned. This is obviously he's talking about gas stoves. And he's saying that if they can't find a solution to, I guess, limiting how bad it is on the indoor air quality, it could be banned. Now, he's not saying they will be banned, but they could be banned.
And this has become a hot topic for lots of politicians and political commentators. You know, Jim Jordan, a representative from Ohio, recently tweeted, God, guns, and gas stoves.
Which I found really funny.
Fox News host Sean Hannity said, not only is Biden coming for your paycheck, he is coming for your stove. You heard me right. The White House is now attempting to ban all gas ovens and burners. And this went very viral. So viral that the chair of the CSPC, Alexander Honen Sarek, said that there was no plan to ban gas stoves. Like, he had to come out and make a statement like, guys,
we're not doing it.
Yeah.
But that, I guess the God, guns, and gas stoves, you know, the implication that, you know, because I think there's always been the thought that people are trying to make you not believe in God anymore and people are coming for your guns. And now they're coming for gas stoves, trying looping them in that category reflects what a time we're in.
And it's interesting because I think no one's really trying to ban gas stoves. You're trying to make them safer. It's an open flame in your home.
I was telling Anna, I had no idea how this doesn't cause more problems. Like, you hear the occasional, oh my gosh, a gas stove is being attributed to the reason this house was set on fire overnight. But I guess more flame is dangerous.
And earlier you mentioned specifically for safer indoor air quality, and studies have actually found that children with asthma are likely to suffer more of consequences from gas stoves being used in their home. This is mostly due to pollutants that are emitted, like the nitrogen dioxide and carbon monoxide that is released when you have that open flame from the gas stove. And a study released in December found that 13% of asthma cases correlated with gas stove usage.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, 13% is not a huge number.
But when you think about how a lot of homes, like every home I've lived in, has had an electric stove. So when you think about the fact that 13% and how few gas stoves there are, because gas stoves I usually attribute with older homes, personally.
Mm-hmm. I did have gas stoves growing up, and I lived in a house that was built in 2014.
Interesting.
That oddly
had
a gas stove, and I was thinking about the reason behind this, in my research, I found that a lot of times people switch to gas stoves because they are cheaper in terms of a direct gas line.
Okay.
And a lot of times they're like built already. And then also, for some reason, they said commercial use. They like to have gas stoves instead of the alternatives, which we'll get into later, which are, you know, electric stoves. So.
Interesting.
I've seen gas stoves before. They're very tiny flames, but they are flames.
I've seen them before. I've been at people's houses that had them and stuff. I personally have never lived in a home that had one, though. Yeah. We've always had electric.
I wonder what it is, too, because, you know, we live on different coasts.
I don't know. Are they less common in Florida than you're from in California? Who knows?
So, who knows? But, you know, this has sparked a lot of controversy, and, you know, people all over, you know, the world, all over the nation are kind of, like, confused over, like, what to do. So in Oregon, actually, there's this doctor. Her name is Julie Goodman. She testified that about the study, that 13% of asthma cases are correlated with gas stove usage. She testified that this study is missing some very important context. She said that in areas with normal ventilation, the effect is negligible, mm-hmm. basically meaning, you know, like, in a lot of areas, even though there's a lot of pollution coming up from gas mm-hmm. stove, it doesn't stick around for a long time, which I guess is true. But what she didn't mention during her testimony is that she was also paid by the gas industry to provide this testimony.
To me, that invalidates anything she says. If you're being paid by the gas industry to talk about gas not being bad and how good it is, come on. Like,
exactly.
I just think even if what she is saying is 100% true, the fact that she's being paid by the gas industry makes her not credible anymore, in my opinion. Like, I'm like, really?
Yeah. But I think what you have to remember is that this happens, you know, everywhere.
This happens all the time, yeah.
Washington, D.C., I guess, is just all political lobbyists.
It is. It's so much. And, you know, it's so interesting, you know, there'll be bills that, like, don't get passed and stuff because they have, like, little clauses about, like, all these different industries that they just have to throw in there to, like, please the lobbyists and stuff like that.
Exactly. So one thing that she noted after people finally discovered that she was working for a company, she says that her testimony was only reflecting her own opinion, mm-hmm. but she did not disclose anything like that, you know, during the testimony. And one thing that I wanted to point our attention to that isn't as big of a deal right now, but could be important for our future references, mm-hmm. is that she works for this company called Gradient.
Okay.
And Gradient, according to the New York Times, and I'm quoting them directly, they are a consulting firm that provides environmental reviews for corporations. Basically, they're a political lobbying firm that will, it looks like, based on our interpretation, give positive reviews environmentally about giant corporations so that they can, you know, be pushed in the right way.
Flashback to our greenwashing episode. Apparently politics is also being greenwashed.
Exactly. I mean, they have a whole firm for this that focuses exclusively on environmental stuff. So I just found that interesting and, you know, a side note to add.
Interesting, yeah. And back to talking about the gas stoves themselves, the American Public Health Association has called gas stoves a public health concern. So, I mean, I personally probably would trust the American Public Health Association more than a woman being paid by the gas industry to say that they're fine.
Exactly. So today we want to kind of just break down the history of what gas stoves are,
mm-hmm.
the problems that they cause and what their solutions might be, how you can, you know, cook your stuff. Because I don't think we're telling you guys to stop cooking.
No, we're not. The greenhouse is not telling you to stop cooking.
Yeah. And we don't even know what the solution of these gas stoves might be. Maybe mm-hmm. there's a way to, like, you know, find a way to protect them.
Maybe more safety precautions or something with them, for sure, yeah.
So gas stoves were first created in about the 18th century, obviously as a means for cooking. For fuel, they usually use natural gas, heating oil, wood, coal, you know, before gas was directly pumped into your homes. Now, all these are bad for the environment, so the less fuel, the better. And for a long time, stoves like these used to be open flame, and mm-hmm. that came with many problems, as we discussed. It was dangerous. It produced a lot of smoke that you could breathe in, so even more respiratory problems than asthma. And then also, it just didn't serve its purpose very well. Its ability to heat up was not great, because, you know, when it's like a flame, part of that flame is, like, not even getting close to the pot or whatever.
And then later on in the 18th century, close-flamed stoves were created and became a commercial success. And people started moving toward these because the cost of gas was cheap. So nowadays, these types of stoves are in a lot of homes, about 40%, according to the initial Bloomberg article. So that's interesting because I never would have guessed it was that high of a percent at 40.
Yeah, and I think it says a lot about our, because I always thought a lot of homes had gas stoves,
mm-hmm.
and I hadn't seen, like, electric stoves until very recent modern homes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's spread out around the country. So there's mm-hmm. a big deal of places that have gas stoves.
Yeah.
And the only difference that makes our gas stoves different now than previous gas stoves is they have an electric ignition, where basically, like, it makes a sound,
mm-hmm.
and then it ignites the flame.
Okay. But methane is emitted when the gas stove is off. So methane, we've talked about before on this channel. It's really not good for the environment. It is a greenhouse gas. We are called the greenhouse. And, you know, so it's warming the planet. And sometimes...
That's something that I wouldn't have expected. Like, even when something is off, how is it going? But I guess it must be something with the pipes and, like, you can't completely shut off a gas. I don't know.
And that's inside your home. So it's an indoor pollutant. So that is, you know, what we're talking about with, you know, asthma and stuff like that. It, you know, this is more toxins that now you are breathing into your lungs.
Exactly. And it stays there forever. I think, like, a lot of times when you're talking about toxins is, like, how quickly can it escape?
Yeah.
But if it stays there forever. And I think that's why that lady who was being paid by the gas organization saying, like, I mean, she does have a point where, like, if it can escape, it doesn't stay that long.
Okay, but I don't want
to take it with the asterisk.
I say I don't want to have to open my windows just to cook, though, you know?
Exactly. So it's a gray area.
Yes, for sure.
So this whole outrage, you know, talking about it on cable channels and Jim Jordan
and Twitter,
what he did. Experts say this has to do with the word ban. You know, Americans don't really like it when you use the word banned because it feels like you're taking away their freedom, something that people really fought for.
Definitely.
So I think a lot of, like, public relations type people are, you know, trying to find a way around it, like maybe asking the commission to require, like, warning labels or, like, altering performance standards or, like, you know, finding a way to control it without telling everyone that they're controlling. Yeah,
for sure. And there are places where things are banned. We'll use that word even though people don't like it.
Yeah.
In New York City, gas pipes are banned for new constructions that are under 7 stories. And this was decided in 2021. And California also voted to ban the sale of gas stoves and gas-powered water heaters by 2030. So, you know, we've got 7 years for that.
So they're not running into your house, as Anna and I mentioned. They're not running and stealing out your gas stove. But
no one is coming into your home and taking out your gas stove. But they are trying to maybe limit how many new gas stoves are being installed and also just, you know, have more safety standards. Like with the in New York, it's only under 7 stories, you know.
Exactly. Because I think, it's something. There are a couple of solutions. To this, for people who are looking away to move away from a gas-powered stove themselves, electric stoves is the biggest one. Here's how they work. Basically, they heat up something called an induction coil, and this heats up, like, a surface. Think of it as, like, a countertop, and then you literally put your thing on it, and you heat it up. There's also a higher success rate because the heat transfers better, I think. The U.S. Energy Administration says electricity is the most common form of cooking these days anyway. So a lot of people are shifting towards it, remaining 40% needs to move.
But in the commercial area, gas is still what is most common and is what apparently works better for cooking bigger things quicker. Exactly.
And they also said cooking techniques, like when you're trying to char something, it's better to use an open flame.
That makes sense.
Because then you can, like, put it in the air and, like, do it on one side.
Yeah.
And all these fancy techniques that we don't have time
for. We are not chefs here in the greenhouse, but thank you for listening. And we will be right back to talk about palm oil and how that's not great for the environment.
Yep, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the greenhouse on Blaze Radio and blazeradioonline.com. I'm Bretham Babal.
And I'm Anna Snow, and we're going to talk about palm oil.
So before researching this topic, I honestly didn't know what palm oil was. I figured it was an oil.
Very smart.
Based on the name. But I actually didn't, and I figured it also came from, like, palm trees or something like that. But I actually didn't know how prevalent it was. And taking a look at what we're about to see, really prevalent, actually.
Yeah, so this was my topic of choosing. you know, a lot of people talk about how bad palm oil is, and I see things, and it's always paired with photos of orangutans, because that is one of the main animals that lives in these habitats where these palm trees are cut down to make palm oil. But there are lots of other animals, not just the cute little orangutans.
A lot more people are hurt.
And a lot of people are affected as well, yes.
Of palm oil.
So one of the main places that palm oil is produced is Indonesia, and it was first discovered about 5,000 years ago. It used to come from West African countries, and it used to be one of their biggest exports in the 1800s, but nowadays most of it is coming from Indonesia.
Yeah, and palm oil, just like any other oil, but it does have, it's like a it's a powerhouse. It has like all the good qualities. It has a long shelf life, so it can be used in, like, products, typically food products. It can be produced year round, which is really helpful for, you know, from a supplier perspective. It can be very profitable. And it is sustainable to produce. But as we find out, this quest for sustainability is actually making it unsustainable.
See, it can be sustainable, but it isn't always, is what we're going to talk about. So palm oil itself is made using fruit bunches from the tree and processed and crushed into that oil. The remainder of the fruit is then used to be stored as kernels, basically. Mm-hmm. But it does cause people to make too much palm oil. In 2014, palm oil was about a third of all of the oil produced, and now it is facing and causing a lot of deforestation.
Exactly. So what's interesting, like, kind of percentage and, like, yield story to talk about, from these fruit bunches, about 23 to 24% of these bunches actually gets converted into the oil that we use.
Okay.
And then the rest goes to, like, be stored as a kernel, which I couldn't figure out what that means, but it was, like, they kept the solid parts of it to be used as something later.
Interesting.
So as we've established this narrative that, you know, people really like using palm oil and it's used in a lot of products, and then it's coupled with some geopolitical stuff.
Yes.
People are hurting for palm oil right now because during the 2022 Ukraine invasion and everything that's happening internationally, Indonesia banned all exports of palm oil. So I found that, you know, really interesting.
That is interesting. And it's also interesting to think how could they banned this export of it. And we've talked about how versatile it is just now, but read ingredients and stuff. Palm oil is in literally everything. It's in so many different kinds of food. It's in makeup. It's in soap. It's literally, palm oil is in everything.
It's crazy. We looked at, we're going to talk about the companies that use palm oil in a little bit.
Yes, we will.
And the list is gigantic.
Yes. And so one organization that is working to help make palm oil more sustainable is the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil, or ROSO. And they have a certification that they will give to companies and stuff. And you can go on their website and look at all these reports of how sustainable the palm oil is and stuff. But they tell you not to boycott palm oil, because even though palm oil has its problems, switching to other vegetable oils, soy, coconut, and stuff, can use 4 to 10 times more land, according to the World Wildlife Organization.
Which is crazy. So the most, it's an odd problem to have, where the most sustainable thing is still being overused.
Yes.
I want to read you a quote from the World Wildlife Organization, because this is very strong and, like, really describes the situation very well. They say, "The best thing we can do is support sustainable palm oil and avoid boycotts, since we know substitutions with other vegetable oils can lead to even further environmental and social harm." So it's, I know
it's such a weird situation. And, like, so many of the topics we have talked about here on The Greenhouse, you know, there's pros and cons, and you kind of, we like to give you the information and then you can make decisions and do, you know, for yourself. But I want to share a few companies that are actually some really big companies that you are probably already buying from that are using sustainable palm oil. So one of them is Ferrero, which, of course, you know, like Ferrero Rocher,
chocolates,
but they also have Nutella, Tic Tacs, Kinder, so, you know, lots of different candies, Butterfingers, Red Hots, Laffy Taffys. So all of those candies use sustainable palm oil, which is great. Another one is IKEA, so all of the food that, obviously their furniture does not use palm oil. When I say it's in everything, I don't mean furniture. But the food and snacks and stuff, they use sustainable palm oil. Mars, which of course makes also a lot of candy, you know, Mars bars, M&Ms, all that stuff, they're good to go. Let's see, Hershey Company, which actually surprised me. So palm oil clearly is in a lot of candy.
Yep.
Estee Lauder, which is a makeup company, they use sustainable palm oil, which is always nice to hear.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
those are just some of the
Those are just a few examples. The
227 companies that are on a pathway to buy sustainable oil. What's interesting is that 55% of these companies, only 55% of these companies, have requirements for their suppliers for, like, deforestation commitments. Mm-hmm. Basically, that means when these companies and suppliers cut down trees to get the palm oil, there's a plan to replant these trees, because these are very helpful for, like, you know, the orangutan, the pygmy elephant, the Sumatran rhino,
Yes.
They're all lost when palm oil is cut. So, but only 55% of these companies, you know, have requirements to avoid deforestation in some way.
And that is also something you can look at on palmoilscorecard.panda.org, which is the website I'm currently on right now. But that is the Roundtable for Sustainable Palm Oil. That is their website that they use to show all of these companies. And sometimes it's a little confusing because they're talking about parent companies. So, like, I mean, obviously...
We were messing around earlier on this website.
Yeah, trying to...
And we were really interested in Trader Joe's.
Because... Trader Joe's, actually, their parent company did not submit for... consideration,
yeah,
which is sad because we love Trader Joe's here and we wanted to know if they were using sustainable palm oil. But there's lots of companies that do. Johnson & Johnson uses sustainable palm oil. I'm looking at it right now. And, you know, that's soaps and body products and stuff like that. But so there's all these different factors and stuff that they use to grade. So there's a total score out of 24. And They're rated on commitments to deforestation, purchasing of sustainable palm oil, supplier accountability, supplier platforms, and then on the ground action. And so for every company, you can scroll through and see all of their little numbers, but then you can look at their full report and get all of the specific details about each of those categories. And they also have a category for human rights, because not only is palm oil bad for, you know, the environment and the animals and causing deforestation and loss of habitat, but a lot of the workers that are required to get the palm oil and to, you know, transfer it and all the different things.
The manual process, because this is a very manual process where you have to, like, dry out the leaf or something, extract the fruit.
Yes, it's an extremely intense process, and a lot of the field workers and stuff that are having to do that are not being compensated fairly or not being treated, you know, well at all.
Exactly. And we just talked about some of the companies that are really good. We did find some interesting companies that were not doing as much, and they include Target, McDonald's, Walmart, Wendy's, Kroger. So, you know, some big names. And, you know, we're not necessarily blaming these big companies, because I'm sure they're not the ones that are, like, going through the unsustainable route and literally chopping down trees and not planting anything back. But they're contracting with their supplier who partakes in these practices. So
yes,
it's not directly these companies' faults, but they are playing a part.
They are actively choosing not to purchase sustainably sourced palm oil. And there's a lot of... I was actually surprised how many big corporations do choose to purchase sustainable palm oil, because I feel like so many big corporations, they usually choose to cut corners and to make things less expensive for themselves. So, you know, a lot of big corporations, they don't go the sustainable route because it's too expensive or it's too much effort. But it's nice to see that, at least for this specific cause, that there are a lot of big corporations that are participating. But it is so sad to see that Target doesn't, you know. I love Target.
Yeah. So, like, you know, this is an interesting, I guess this is a good type of problem to have where, since a lot of big corporations are choosing to use palm oil sustainably, all you have to think about is what you as an individual consumer use. So if you want to buy palm oil for yourself, try to buy it
and
sustainably.
When you talk about somewhere like Target or Walmart, that is talking about their, like, in-house brands that they, like, what a good value is Walmart's, like, in-store brand.
Kirkland Signature for
Costco. Exactly.
Yeah.
So a lot of these products that are on the good list of they do use sustainable palm oil can be purchased at a place like, you know, Target or Walmart.
Exactly. So these are just some helpful tips to, I guess, aid your oil buying experience.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us on today's Greenhouse. I'm Pratham Blal.
And I'm Anna Snow. And don't forget to tune in next week for all things planet Earth.
We will see you next Wednesday at 1 p.m. Goodbye, everyone.